I'm so grateful to have this opportunity, as I always am, when Pam's not here, to step into her shoes, which is impossible. But I'm grateful to have this opportunity to talk about the adventure from grief to gratitude. And we see that as this linear line. When it's forward and backward steps, it goes in every direction. And so I want to start by reading you. So often I plan every detail of the talk, and in so many ways lately, I think nudged by COVID and nudged by so many experiences, that I've tried to make that shift, and maybe it is that journey of aging, where I make that shift of letting my mind, my ego mind, lead, and then telling my body, just keep up, and my intellect, you know, and my spirit, like, don't touch the dials on the, you know, radio. I'm shifting to letting spirit lead, and my life has been so full lately that I intentionally created it so I didn't have a whole lot of time to overplan. I did my best to let whatever that divine voice of love is that channels through be what speaks today. So this is kind of the conglomerate of storytelling that I want to take advantage of this time for today. I want to start by reading you something by Cahil Gibran. Some of you may know the poet. He wrote on joy and sorrow. When a woman said, "Speak to us of joy and sorrow," and he answered, "Your joy is your sorrow unmasked." Think about that. Your joy is your sorrow unmasked. And the same well from which your laughter rises was oftentimes filled with your tears. And how else can it be? The deeper that sorrow carves into your being, the more joy you can contain. It is not the cup that holds your wine, the very cup is not the cup that holds your wine, the very cup that burned in the potter's oven. And is it not the lute that soothes your spirit, the very wood that was hollowed with knives? When you are joyous, look deep into your heart, and you shall find it is only that which has given you sorrow that is giving you joy. When you are sorrowful, look again in your heart, and you shall see that in truth you are weeping for that which has been your delight. Some of you say joy is greater than sorrow, and others say, nay, sorrow is the greater. But I say unto you, they are inseparable. Together they come, and when one sits alone with you on your board, remember that the other is asleep upon your bed. Verily, you are suspended like scales between your sorrow and your joy. Only when you are empty can you stand still balanced. When the treasure keeper lifts you to weigh his gold and his silver, neither must your joy or your sorrow rise or fall. So for those of you who don't know me, I'm Rhonda Hull. I've been part of this community since just pre-Pam. So I celebrated my 20th anniversary as well. And so I have been with Unity through our time of doing church in a box at Masonic, to manifesting this building and creating the community that we have here now. So I want to ask you, is there anyone here today who is grieving something? We all are grieving something. As Clara said, we're grieving the horrible attacks and experience. We're grieving every time we look at the news. We're grieving the loss of a loved one, of a pet. In the same breath that we're grieving, today I'm waiting for a dear friend a call because she's due any time to give birth to a courageous little human being who's going to impact this world in some positive way. So we are all on the journey from grief to gratitude in big or small ways. Life can be awesome, and it can be awful. And it's awesome and awful at the same time. Death to me is the reminder to live life fully. No one sitting here gets out alive. We all have a terminal expiration date. Some of us die quickly, some of us die slowly. Some of us die moment by abandoning who we are to be someone for someone else, something or some way for someone else. Have you ever noticed that when you hear bad news, you take a breath and hold it? And yet it's that first, like, inhale, like you hold on to life. You want to hold on to everyone in it with you. You don't want to feel alone. You hold that breath. And then often when you exhale, it comes with tears. It comes with fear. The truth is that grief and gratitude are dear friends, and they value each other's company. And when we hear bad news, or when we lose a loved one, or lose a pet, or lose a democracy, or lose an image or a perception of someone else in our life, when we feel that shift or change, we bump into our own mortality because we're all so busy hanging on to our comfort zone. And we want those people and those things to remain the way we want them to be in our comfort zone. I have taken a job as bereavement coordinator for Assured Hospice up in Port Angeles. And I said, what the, are you, how can you do a 40-hour-a-week job? I had no idea that I could. And the way that I can is by, I did it today, I'll do it tomorrow, I'll do it the next day, because I know that somehow I was tapped on the shoulder by whatever that inner calling, that inner voice is, that I'm doing my best to follow rather than following my ego mind, that it called me to stand at that veil from grief, and how can I help people transform it into gratitude? I started out way back when as a childbirth educator, a birth doula, and I would be at a birth and feel that magic that happens so close to the veil. And I wanted, like, I haven't been at a birth lately. I need to be at a birth. It would call me because I would stand at that veil. I had a near-death experience when I was 16 that shifted me out of, it continues to be an unending journey of shifting from that indoctrinated belief in something, a God that's up there with a white beard and does judges and if we do it wrong, to knowing, experiencing that we're all one. And it was challenging, it continues to be challenging to be in a human form, feeling so raw and vulnerable, knowing that truth in a world that doesn't always get it, doesn't always see it. So I know that I am on that journey from womb to tomb, you know, and connecting all of the losses and challenges in between, sometimes with grace and sometimes with not. And it is that process of dancing from grief to gratitude all the time, sometimes having them coexist, that has gotten me to this point. I know that through my near-death experience, the transformative moment came when I stepped out of that place of trying to figure out how not to drown, how to get out of an undertow, how to get out of the freight train sound that happened at that moment. And I remember having a voice that I didn't hear through my ears, a transmission that said, surrender. All you have to do is surrender. This won't be a bad way to die. And in the moment of surrender is when that experience unfolded for me. Of sound stopped. Vision stopped. All the five senses, hearing, taste, touch, sound, smell, all of that disappeared into a oneness that was just that luminescent white light. And then that same voice said, you're not to stay. You need to return to be a bridge person. And I didn't want to. I didn't want to. And for a very long time, I felt, oh, that Catholic stuff that says you failed there, so you have to come back to Earth school. Well, but I've done my best at shedding that indoctrinated part and surrendering here to knowing that love is the answer to every question, regardless of what we see out there. And whatever I call faith, love is my God. Faith is hard in human form, but we all do our best. But it is in that moment of letting go of control that the magic happens. We don't grow very much sitting in our comfort zone. It's when we face the challenges, the grief, that's what hones us, shapes us, creates the container. And it's like, can we bring love to that rather than feel the victim of it? So I started out as childbirth educator and being there at births, and very soon after that, I experienced three deaths in my life very close together. My grandmother died first. She was 80, 82, I think. I could justify that because she had lived a long, hard, good life, and I had to surrender her. Soon after that, close friend of mine in college that I had not seen for about 6 years, I found out that he was going to be teaching at a school close by where I lived, and I was going to go sit in his office and surprise him. The weekend before that, I got word that he had taken a group of students to the Russian River in California and drowned in a rafting accident. So it's like, well, wait a minute, old people die, but that's a peer. So it bumped me then into my own mortality. And then 2 weeks after that, my dear friend Marcia gave birth had given birth. I had been to all three of her babies being born. And her third son, Marshall, drowned in their hot tub 2 weeks before his first birthday on Mother's Day. And so that's when I went, holy crapola, I don't understand this. I don't like this. I get death. Okay, at least my friend Larry was doing what he loved, taking kids rafting. But a baby doesn't make sense to me. And yet in my childbirth career, I found myself there at that portal, at that veil, helping two moms who lost their babies at birth. And it's hard, it's really hard to have faith in those moments. But life and death are messy and unpredictable. And yet I emerged from my near-death experience. I don't fear death. Like, how close can I get to the veil? Like, can I stand there now? Like, just let me sneak through. I don't fear death. I think, like all of us, we fear what comes before it. We're all standing in that unknown right now of, can we match the quality of our life to the quantity of our life, rather than having the quality end here and then it gets pretty messy until then. You know, it's a crazy journey. And I've heard a medium, a channeler say, it being asked, well, aren't you afraid of talking to dead people? And he says, no, I'm much more afraid of talking to live people. So I get that. So I think my journey has been to heal my own grief. And after those experiences, we had two back-to-back earthquakes in California. And I thought, well, understanding, like knowledge is power. I'll just read about earthquakes. And so I don't have to be afraid of them anymore. And the more I read, the more scared I got, because in California and here, everywhere you stand, you're standing on a fault line. So I have people friends who are in Florida, and I go, well, I think I would just rather not know when it's going to happen rather than worry about it for the hurricanes coming. So no matter where you are, there's a thing. There's a thing, something there. But all of that anxiety and loss and fear and earthquakes sent me on a quest. And the quest for my own healing brought me to the Northwest. It brought me to Orcas Island. And some of you may know who Elizabeth Kubler-Ross is. She's the mother, grandmother, ancestor now mother of making death and dying something that we can talk about rather than have it be a taboo. Because the Japanese have a tradition of talking about death. If you think about death daily, it brings you to this moment of saying, who am I going to be right here while I'm here? So I went to Orcas Island to this training, this workshop with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. So there were about 30 of us. And it was made up of people who had experienced horrible losses. Mine felt so insignificant compared to what I witnessed and heard. There was one man there from who had experienced horrible things in Vietnam with horrible PTSD and had to do horrible things, even to small children, while he was there. So he was telling all of these stories with anguish and tears and snot coming from his nose and just weeping uncontrollably. And Elizabeth, who I had this vision of her as this sweet, loving little person. She's very German. I mean, stereotypically, she was just a gruff, to the point, cut the crap type person. And so she sat across knee to knee with this man as he is sharing with a box of Kleenex right there. And everything in me sitting where you're sitting saying, hug him, just hug him, hand him a Kleenex. And so I'm thinking those things. So after they processed and got to a much more peaceful, released place for him, she asked, I can't do the German accent, are there any questions, you know? And somebody else was braver than me because it was in my mind. She said, why didn't you hand him a Kleenex? Why didn't you hug him? And she said, why would I do for him what he can do for himself? The Kleenex were right there. And then I thought, well, and she said, if I had hugged him from my pain, I would have trapped both of us in our grief. And so she waited for him to process before, at the end, she asked permission, may I hug you now? So that was an amazing insight to me about how to stand with grief, let people have their experience, because we keep trying to hold a beach ball under the water. You know, if it just pushed down my grief, don't cry now, be a man, don't do it this way, push that down. That's our own cancer. That's our own dis-ease that we create by holding and suppressing things. So finding the right and safe place to release is so important. It's what grief is. And when we allow grief to move through, beyond, it's not really that grief is going to go away. It's that our life will be able to expand around it and hold it differently. The other thing that I learned in my near-death experience was that, you know, in this human form, we have 5 senses. But what happens when you're standing at the veil, either at a birth or at a death, and even when we're experiencing our own little mini births and deaths along the way of a divorce, losing money, whatever it is, if you are attuned, you access more than those 5 senses. So right now, if you think of someone that you have, who has died, it's like I really try to pay attention to my words, because a friend of mine, when she was little, her brother died, and the parents came home and said, we lost your brother at the hospital. And then, because nobody talked about death, it was like, well, where did he go? Are they going to find him? So we have our human 5 senses, but at the veil, and here and now we can access beyond them. So right now, if you think of someone who has died, and you think of a burning question that you would want to ask them if they're still here, so just do that for a moment. So my mom came through, and what's true is I heard her voice. I didn't hear it with my ears, but you heard it. Just like when I was drowning, I heard a transmission. It was a transmission that wasn't through my ears. We think that person is gone, but it's like if I went and stood in the other room, I'm not really gone. I'm just not here in the form that you would want me to be. But we can access that which we don't have here. Another thing that was so powerful about being with Elizabeth was there was a woman there who came. Elizabeth had talked to her before she came. her daughter had drowned and been attacked by a shark on the East Coast. And Elizabeth had asked her to bring three drawings, bring any drawings that her daughter had drawn. And the mom said she drew these three drawings in the car on the way to this little cottage that they were going to stay at by the seaside. And I think I've mentioned this before here, but it's, she showed the drawings. And what Elizabeth was trying to convey is like, we know. We are here, but we are all at the same time. And this first drawing, this the mom took the two little girls pregnant, she was pregnant with the third, to this cottage on the ocean that actually led out to the ocean. There was a little white picket fence, it had flower boxes, it was a little tiny cottage. She drove the kids out first. The dad was going to follow later that evening. The mom unpacked the car, brought in the ice chest, did all of that. But being pregnant, the girls were playing in this little front yard. The girls were 6 and 4. And she lay down on the couch and dozed. She fell asleep and woke up to screams. And she went out, and there was the crowd, and the 6-year-old was still standing on the shore. But the little 4-year-old had drowned, you know, went out and then got attacked by sharks, a shark, and that's what alerted this mom. So she brought these drawings, and the first drawing was of the cottage. It had the flower boxes, the doors and the windows were all in the right place. It had the white picket fence drawn out in front. This little girl had never seen this place, but she drew the image of it. The second drawing was of one little girl, of both of the girls standing by the seashore. So it showed the ocean and the waves and two little girls. The third drawing that she brought was one little girl standing by the seaside and a shark's fin out in the water. I love hate woo-woo. I just love hate woo-woo. It's, I just know that we know. And I know that we surrender, we accept. And can we do it here now? That's the faith, that's the trick. There was one other person there that touched me. A woman came because her husband had died in a motorcycle accident unexpectedly. And it was a circumstance where he was someplace else on this motorcycle. By the time she got to him, he had been cremated without her ever seeing him, without her agreeing to it, without, it was just a weird set of circumstances. But she was locked in that moment of hearing that news, and she couldn't break free of it, and she didn't know what to do with his ashes. She brought them to this workshop. And Elizabeth decided that we were all going to celebrate her husband, David. And she agreed, and we were all going to spread his ashes. Well, we were on Rosario Hill over on Orcas Island, if you know it. We had a cake. Somebody brought a guitar. We all were going to celebrate David. Because we celebrate when a baby is born. Everybody on the other side, those angels and ancestors are saying, oh, good luck down there. You just, you know, have a great, and you go through. We celebrate them here after a very traumatic entry process, even if it's gentle. And then we grieve them at the other end while everybody on the other side is saying, welcome home, you know? So there are these two points. And so we celebrated David, and everybody took a handful of David's ashes in their hands. Most of us had never felt that. And we stood hand in hand, arm in arm, on Rosario Hill, and on the count of three, 1, 2, 3, we released David, and at that very moment, this breeze came up, and all of David was all over all of us, you know? all over the cake, all over everything. And it was the demonstration of that. It's so bizarre. It's just so wonderful that it's okay to laugh at loss. That's what David would have wanted. That was David blowing the wind and bringing ashes all over us. So sorrow and humor can walk hand in hand. I was at my parents' passing, my dad dropped dead. I didn't get to be with him at his passing, but I was with my mom, and she taught me so many important lessons about being here now. I was wanting to go over, like, let's rehash the past, Mom. You were alcoholic, you drank too much, you had these issues, you fell short in this, you know, it's like, we have to find peace with this. And she would say, but I'm here now. Do you really want to spend time in the past? And then our conversation the night before she died would drift to, hey, Mom, you're not going to be here for the graduations and the births and the marriages and the everything. And she said, oh, I will be. I just won't bring my body. But can we be here now? I'm here right now. Do you want to use this moment being either in the past or the present? So the trick is being here now. Some of you remember my grandnephew Connor. When I was very early here, he was barely two and he was diagnosed with leukemia. And I spent almost a year, more than not, over on the Seattle side when they airlifted him down from Alaska. And I helped care for his little brother, Carson, who is now 6'4". And for that year, I watched this little guy go through hell. Mouth sores, chemo, radiation. I can't tell you how many times I've seen the movie Cars just sitting with him because he couldn't go outside of this room. He's 19. When he got out of the hospital after his bone marrow transplant, he came, it was his birthday when they released him. And we came to the window. My niece, before they flew back up to Alaska, came to see me. We went to the window at Unity outside of Masonic during service. And everybody who had followed his journey through me came to the window and sang that kid happy birthday. And he buried his head into his mom and said to her, how do they know it's my birthday? That's what love is. That's what love does. Through heartache, through celebration. And he's 19, working at a Mod Pizza, and he just got courageous enough, because he's had some physical challenge as a result of all of the stuff they had to put in him to get him this far, that he got his learner's permit, and driving permit. So, yay, Connor. So it's not hard for me. It's hard, but it's part of who I'm meant to be, to stand with grief and hold the space for people. I can't do it for them, but how can I share that awareness so that others can feel it through the other senses beyond our five? That love is the answer to every question. And death has a way of asking more questions than answering them when we're in our human form. Grief is a complex process. So what I want to leave you with today is just a reminder that acknowledging the pain and the messiness is key. Let it be. Let it be. And then say, peace, be still. Like, let it. Let it do what it does with you. Be as compassionate with yourself as you are with others. Let your grief pour out of you in unexpected ways so that you can be grateful even when it's messy. And stop holding the beach ball under the water. Find your safe place, your safe person, your safe experiences, your safe ways to release. And if there's any way that I can serve on that journey, let me know. Don't beat yourself up over what you could have done, should have done. I heard somebody just recently say, wherever there's a should, there's shame. Whether you're there at the moment somebody dies, whether you're in the next room, whether you're across the country, you're still there. Just like my mom said, I'll be there, I just won't bring my body. Recognize that love never dies. We have five senses that we experience in this reality. It's not easy, but I know that everyone sitting here, everyone without exception, if you have tapped into unity somehow, you're aware that we're love and we're loved. And we are that spark of starlight. We are the divine. Honor the spirit of love between you and your loved one and all of the people you care about, the pets you care about, the earth you care about in this life. By living your life as fully and unafraid as possible. That's what we have to remember every moment. If you ask that question of the person you love, like, I don't want to be here, I don't want to do this, too hard, I miss you, we can't, what would they say to you? Go live life. This is the life you have remaining. Live it as fully as you can, as messy as it is. Let the good, the bad, and the ugly all be part of life. That is what amalgams you into the strength of knowing that you already are love. You don't have to do anything. You just are it. You just need to recognize it. So I want to close by reading you the lyrics to a song. I wish I could show you the video, but you'll have it in person next month. A dear friend of mine, Lisa Firestone, and Jana Stanfield collaborated on a song. It's Lisa's song. Lisa herself went through her own health challenges. And from that emerged the lyrics of this song. It's called Unafraid. I'm unafraid to live. I'm unafraid to die. To love with all my heart, even when it makes me cry. I'm learning to surrender what I cannot change so I can face each new day unafraid. Unafraid when I live from love. Unafraid when I give from love. Unafraid and it fills my cup when I live from love. I'm unafraid of truth because it leads to understanding. I'm unafraid of sorrow. It keeps my heart expanding. My life's patchwork quilt of all the memories made, wrapped inside it, I feel unafraid. Unafraid when I live from love, unafraid when I give from love, unafraid, and it fills my cup when I live from love. I can hear her beautiful voice in my head. We trust that our heart tells us or what other people say. Either way, regret catches up to us one day. But every risk I took and every price I paid was a step to where I'm standing, unafraid. Unafraid when I live from love, unafraid when I give from love, unafraid and it fills me up when I live from love. God knows I've surrendered, and heaven knows I've prayed. So I will go where I'm going, unafraid. And so as best you can, elbow to elbow, arm to arm, fist bump to fist bump, even when you don't bring your body, do your best to be here unafraid, to know that you have a community that joins you in that energy, that knows and sees who you are, and sees you as love, and sees that we are all together on this adventure from grief to gratitude to grief to gratitude to grief to gratitude, grief to gratitude, grief to gratitude. So it is. Thank you for letting me be with you today.